As you may or may not know, we've had Wednesday and Thursday we had panels, which was always a bit more fun. It's always a bit more fun to have sort of interaction with Dick Gross, who's my favourite, probably my favourite atheist. I've got a few, so I don't want to damage the relationships. But he writes for The Age, and he's just good fun, and he's honest. And we also had, on the Wednesday, we had a psychic, Greg, who then went on that night to win The One. And I tried to vote for him, because I promised I would have never voted on any of those things, but I rang through too late, even though the program was on. But and he won that night, saying we were in the presence of greatness and didn't realise it. And it is interesting, I've not watched the show, and I am a deeply sceptical person. After I became a Christian, I joined the Australian Skeptics. Not everyone in the Australian Skeptics is an atheist. Many of them are. And there's no reason why you can't be Christian and be a member of the Australian Skeptics. But I am deeply sceptical of anything I see on television. Magic on television is, I just think, almost a waste of time, because I'm so sceptical about who knows what they've done. I mean, one of the things we learned about the show is that they filmed the end three times. So it looks live. This is not giving away any secret that you couldn't find it elsewhere. They actually filmed the end of The One three times, with Greg winning once, one of the other women winning out, and the other. And then they filmed it, had the vote, and then put whatever ending the vote was, so that they had to pretend I won. So you just can't tell the television. You know, like the television is so clever. And it's right to be sceptical of anything. And I think, really, this is a side point. Particularly when you watch documentaries on television, you need to be triply sceptical. Because no one makes a documentary if they haven't got a reason for doing it. But the people to be really sceptical of are the people who tell you at the beginning. I always want to put an English accent on at this point, but my most memorable one was a British guy standing in front of this beautiful old University of England saying, "Now this is going to be an objective study of the information about Jesus from history. No dogma, no prior beliefs, just what history." And I have no. I thought, you lying dog! I've just read a book written by you. This is a wholesale attack at the jugular of Christianity, which is what the show was. So you always be suspicious of the person who says, "I have no bias." They're either completely lying to you, or they've got no self-knowledge, because we've all got biases. And the helpful thing is to be aware of your prejudice. And our culture has got a prejudice about spirits. I mean, I was brought up in Sydney, and just like Melbourne, a big city, all the prejudices of the scientific revolution, the post-enlightenment culture. I knew evil spirits didn't exist, like I knew God didn't exist for much of my life. I was a modern scientific man. I'm so old now. I suppose nowadays, if I was going through high school and first bit of uni, I'd be saying I'm a postmodern scientific man. But and our culture gives us extreme biases. There are things that we just know aren't true, you know. But if you meet people from other cultures, they know they are true. And you can be equally intelligent, equally well educated. Every culture has got a series of prejudices and biases. So when you come to look at spiritual questions, we all come with certain prejudices that our culture gives us. And that's not wrong, nor is it avoidable. So when Rob started the panel discussions on Wednesday and Thursday, he threw the question to the panellists, asking, "Do you believe in angels and demons?" To which the spiritualist on Wednesday said sort of yes, the psychic guy said yes, sort of. Dick Gross said, "Well, no, I don't." And I said, "Yes, but the more important question, I think, is to work out, how do you know what's true spiritually?" That's the question that's often not asked. In a sense, more important than what you believe is why you believe. And that's tied up with the question of who you believe. Now, if you look back at an enormous number of the beliefs that you have about the world, about people, about how to succeed, about what's expected of you to be a decent person, they've been taught to you by family, influential people in your life, schools you went to. The school will normally reflect some of your parents' views. That's why they sent you there, particularly as a private school. They mightn't agree with the religion of it, but they will believe the undergirding culture. That's why they send you to a private school. So, for me, I went from being a very, very happy and, I would have thought, almost completely content atheist. Frankly, if you weren't sick and you did your HSC, which is like, what's that? The VC, whatever it is. You know, end of school. one thing. In 1973, which is when I left school, I want some respect, I'm very old. I've got my zither frame outside. You know, it was a very easy time to enjoy life. You know, there was unemployment was something you studied literally as an interesting piece of history in the Depression. You could walk out of school, I nearly did, in year 12, into any number of really interesting cadetships. And it was just a great, sexually transmitted disease were under control, as far as we knew. Sexual revolution actually set some of them free, and we're great geniuses we are. But, you know, it was all under control with antibiotics, etc. We were out of Vietnam, you know, it was good. I reluctantly got convinced that Jesus did exist, that the Bible was a pretty good history, and that Jesus rose from the dead. So I believe I'm a disciple of Jesus. We're all disciples of someone. It's just worthwhile working out who, and are they a trustworthy person to trust? You can ask questions about this or disagree with this in a few minutes when I shut up. So when I'm asked, do I believe in the devil? My answer is yes. When I ask, do I believe in hell? Yes. Do I believe in all sorts of things? What I'm thinking, what's happening in my brain is, I'm going, what does Jesus say? Yeah. Which is a bit like what I do in all sorts of areas of life where I don't know much. Like, if my teeth start to hurt, I finally go to the dentist. I've got a great dentist. And if he says, Ian, the best thing is tear that tooth out, I'll go, okay. If he says, best to do this without a needle, I'll ask him questions about that. But in the end, I trust him, you know what I mean? And I trust him for very, very good reasons, but he can still be wrong. And I trust Jesus. He is my eyes into the spiritual world. So if Jesus didn't believe in the devil, I wouldn't. If Jesus didn't believe in hell, I wouldn't. If Jesus said that at the end of life it is food for worms, enjoy your life, and here's how to do it, that's what I'd believe. I thought if I'd just share one or two ideas from statements from Jesus in John chapter 8. John's Gospel, a book that I think is clearly written by an eyewitness, but we can talk about that tonight if you like. Listen to what Jesus says here. This is, at the end of this chapter, they're trying to kill him, which is not uncommon in his life. He is so irritating. He says this. Again, therefore, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. The one who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. And just worth imagining, you're so lucky to be here. Because I am the light of the world. The one who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You may well think, I knew Sydney people were arrogant. This is outrageous. Because remember, what Jesus isn't saying is, I'm one of the lights of the world. It's quite clear in the English as it is in the original. He's saying, I am the light of the world. The one who follows me, you know, will not walk in darkness. The presumption is that the world is a dark place. People are living in the dark, groping around, doing the best they can. And Jesus says, I've come as light into a dark place. And the question is, you either agree with Jesus, say, yes, you are the light of the world, therefore I will follow you. Or, I think often, even unconsciously, people say, no, you're not the light of the world. I don't trust you. I know more than you do in many things. I'll go my own way. And without meaning to, we're being quite rude. It doesn't matter if Jesus is wrong. It just matters for us and for him if he's right. Because if he's right, he may take that personally when we say, you're not really the light of the world. I know more than you do, don't I? And if it's true that he's the light of the world, and if you follow him, you'll have the light of life, you damage yourself as well, if it's true. I believe in the devil, and I believe in angels and demons, although I want to define them differently to the images that pop into our brains, I think, significantly shaped by Christian art, which has sometimes been very unhelpful, and even more powerfully for many of us nowadays, Hollywood. So when I say a word, what comes up in your, unless you're a very unusual person, is not, you know, a series of words, you know, angels. So you see, what comes up when I say the word angels is pictures in our head, right? And you go, I don't believe in those. Well, most, you know, I don't believe in the pictures of angels and demons that we have, these sort of slightly effeminate, but very beautiful creatures with lovely wings that come out of the back, and demons, these sort of fat little hobgoblin-y things with spikes and they stick in the bum and laugh fiendishly as they burn your toes over the, you know, all that sort of stuff. let me get to what Jesus does. This is one of the key verses. So when I get up, people say, do you believe in that whole spiritual world? The answer is yes, and here's why. Because later on in John chapter 8, the chapter where he says, I'm the light of the world. At verse 31, he says, my teaching brings truth, and the truth will set you free. And then verse 44, he's arguing with a group of religious people, and he says this. You are of your father, the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning. He does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks according to his own nature. For he is a liar and the father of lies. And that, for me, is one of the central insights into the spiritual world, that there are personalities. And we tend to think of persons as having bodies. But it is possible to have a person that is an intelligence that thinks and wills things. When people, I think often in good faith, say, I don't believe that there's a devil, I just believe there are forces of evil. That, we're too indebted at that point to Star Wars, with that idea of the force, because you can't have an evil force. Forces aren't evil as far as I understand them. You can't have evil hydroelectric, well, I suppose you could say, but destroyed trees. Do you know what I mean? But water isn't evil. It can kill you, but it's not evil. If it dragged you out to the ocean and you fight too hard. Electricity isn't good or evil. Right? You can't have a good force or an evil force. Good and evil are actually personal qualities. It's to do with what you choose to do with your power. That's what makes something good or evil. So this whole nonsense, I don't mean to be dismissive, but I am a bit dismissive. I think it's well-intended, but it's silly to speak of, you know, I don't believe in an evil personality, but I believe there's evil forces of evil. Well, no, you can't have an evil. You know, generally, it's neutral. It's like electricity. You can't have evil electricity. You can use it evilly. You can torture people with it. You can kill people. Or you can light up a hospital. It's neutral. And what Jesus says is that the devil is... I am going to shut up a second. Throw it up for any question you want to ask in this whole region. But Jesus says two things about the devil. He is a liar and a murderer. He implies a third. Lying is his method. So perhaps the other key statement in the Bible about evil and the devil and demons is that the devil disguises himself as an angel of light. That I take it, if you ever do meet some concentration of a spirit that is evil, it will not come to you dressed in its natural clothing. It is a bit, and I don't want to be childish with this, but it's a bit like pedophiles. When they seek to lure children as they do, they always come as friend, offering. You know, when I was a kid, I was looking back, I didn't know what was happening at the time. A man tried to lure me to his place, and I just had a creepy feeling. I didn't know what was going on, but I just had a bad feeling about this person, for which I'm thankful. But he was very kind, offering me all sorts of things. And that's what pedophiles do. And Jesus' view of evil is that's what evil does. It never comes, or hardly ever comes, in its true colours. It comes offering, promising, showing little bits of power that may think, oh, this is a good power, I can trust this. It's a liar. And that is the consistent... one of the things I'm amazed about the Bible in the last... you might think I'm easily amazed... I'm just amazed that the consistency of the Bible's teaching from the earliest stories right through the last book. Very different images, very different words used, but there's an extraordinary... the devil is always a liar. That's from the very first time he turns up in Genesis. He's lying. And he's fundamentally lying to us about God and how to live. That's what he does with Adam and Eve in that story. He lies about the nature. He can't trust God. He's not really good. He's not really on your side. You'll find life away from God. Right? So the devil is a liar. He'll always disguise himself. And his intention, Jesus says, he is a liar and a murderer. His intention is always to deceive and to destroy. And the other thing that's clear here is, and then I will stop for any question you like, is he's gathering people. Because he says to these very religious people, you are of your father, the devil. So that his intent is actually to gather people to his side, not to make them Satanists at all, but there is a real power of evil, and that there are lesser powers the Bible touches on. They're right on the margins of the Bible. They're there, quite they're quite really there, but the Bible doesn't tell us much about them. It does tell us how to deal with them, but it doesn't tell us much about their origins and the finesse of how they work, because they will keep changing in form and pattern. So there's a half answer to some of the questions. It might be more interesting if we throw it open now for questions. You may want to take us in a completely different direction. A jelly bean for the first question, that's always the hardest.
Maybe I'm always keen for a jelly bean. So maybe just while people gathering their thoughts and thinking, you mentioned before, you said you'd follow Jesus wherever he went. Like, if Jesus believed this, then I'll believe that. Yeah. Is that a blind faith?
No, it's an informed faith. It's a wise faith. It's blind, if you like, in as much as I would hope I'll go wherever he wants me to go, whatever he teaches. But it's utterly informed. I'm persuaded that there is no one more impressive than him. There is no one who's conquered death. There's no one who's made the claims he's made. I mean, I think people we just tend to generalise from our specific experience. Muhammad makes, his claim to be a prophet, that is so, I mean, it may be true, it may not be true, but his claim is so dull compared to Jesus' claim. Jesus doesn't claim to be a prophet. He never used that category himself. He's speaking enough. That's why they kill him. Jesus just claimed to be a prophet. He may have lived a longer life. But the claims of Jesus are so momentous. And then his defeat of death, even the fact, I think we often think of resurrection, everyone, religious people, that's what they think happens to their boys. But it's just not true. We don't realise that not only is the resurrection true historically, but it's weird. Moses dies, the Jews don't feel any need to pretend he rose from the dead. The Buddha died eating poison mushrooms offered up by a friend, just didn't know what he was feeding him. And his body was burnt and then ashes sent all over Asia. You can visit Muhammad's grave if you're a Muslim. I can't go there, it's in Medina. They won't let me. Zoroaster, all these guys. But that Jesus is so weird. We just think religious people do miracles, they don't. Religious people think they rise from the dead, they don't. So I think Jesus is utterly credible, and therefore I trust him, and with good reason. Any questions about spirits, etc.?
One of the problems I have, just coincidentally, someone just randomly asked questions about the devil yesterday, because there's a guy in Saskatoon in Canada who's written a couple of books saying that the biblical word that's used for the devil actually never spiritual or cosmic entities. So he's saying that our understanding of the devil as an entity at all is wrong. But anyway, I thought it was quite easy to refute that from scripture. But this guy claims to be his ideas from scripture. But so what I said was, we're adversaries to God, and we're also cosmic. And we're also spiritual, and so he's already made these fallacious claims.
Yeah.
What claims could we make that we are actually spiritual?
And we're spiritual.
And how would we know? Yeah, because we just assume that we're material things, but how do we know ourselves that we're spiritual beings?
Yes, interesting question. I think just to comment on that guy from Saskatchewan, I haven't heard about him. Dick Gross, if I can quote my favourite atheist at the moment, he makes the comment, the Bible's a big book, it's a fat book. And you can, up until about 5 years ago, I always fought hard against the idea you can prove anything from the Bible. I think now it's true you can. I don't think the Bible's the slightest bit unclear, but there's enough statements in a book this big, and enough of it's poetic, and there's enough stories in it, that you can, if you want to, you can head off and find a word here, a verse there, and twist it. So I think you can, but you can do that probably with Shakespeare. Not that I want to compare them, but anybody who's written enough, they'll have enough statements, they'll have enemies speaking. So you can find terrible things said in the Bible, but they're actually said by enemies. They're recorded as, this is sometimes where Muslims get mistaken, because in the Quran is all God speaking. I don't mean to be rude, it is like that. It's this very authoritative voice. So if it meets you in a certain psychological position, it's very comforting to have this voice. The Bible is full of stories, and there's bad guys speaking, and there's good guys speaking. And you can, the word devil is the standard word. It's diabolos, and it means slanderer. Right? So Satan. It is the word for opponent or enemy. And what the Bible is always doing is taking ordinary words. So the word gospel that you may hear around churches, that's not a religious word. That's a Roman government word. It's the gospel of Jesus. What Christians do is the word church is not a religious word. So you can do all sorts of silly games if you want to play games with words. The word church just means gathering. It was used of riots at one point in councils. But it's the church of Jesus. So that's what Christianity takes ordinary words and simply... It's quite clear from the beginning of the Bible, right to the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 12, there's this portrayal of this horrible dragon. It's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but with seven heads. And that'd make Jurassic Park look like a picnic, frankly. Seven-headed Tyrannosaurus Rex. It's this horrible picture of this beast. And an interesting thing, that the dragon never deals with mankind directly. He uses these two beasts, which are also kind of scary. And then in case you're not sure who the dragon is, who this dragon is, it says, it's a very important part of it, so it says, the devil, Satan, the ancient serpent. It goes bang, 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 just in case you're unsure how to interpret the vision. But you know, it's kind of for dummies, see footnote, you know. So I think that the guy in Saskatchewan, there's always money to be made attacking the Bible. And you always make more money doing that than you do than just being sensible with it. See, how are we spiritual beings? One of the funny things with the word spirit is hard to know exactly what it means. People will often say, I'm a spiritual person. I meet atheists, say I'm a spiritual atheist. I think it sometimes just means, I think there's more to life than just material stuff. Are humans just wet sacks of DNA? You know, just flapping around, handing on their DNA. And people like me, frankly, just taking up space. Because my three daughters, they can survive happily without me. I've done it. Now, if in the end the selfish gene is right, I've done the job, I should just get out of the way. Stop wasting resources. But frankly, most of the baby boomers should do that, I think. We've so screwed the world in so many ways. Get off Redyard, get. We were the hippies who were going to change the world. We were the greediest generation in Western history, I think. You can sort that debt out with you. Spiritual, I think, means that is there more to humans? Is there something enduring? Is there something more than just the body? That when the body dies, is that the end of the human? Now, frankly, I don't mind that idea. This idea that people, I've had a good life. If in the end God said, Pally, I've changed the rules, there's no heaven, there's no hell, to die is not, I mean, I don't, humans are hot, we're driven for life. That keeps us alive. But frankly, if in the end I die and sleep, I'm a fan of sleeping. So I think there is just as much argument that the reason people don't believe in God is that they are terrified, to use Hamlet's words, perchance to dream. Ah, there's the rub. You know, the fact that when you sleep, it might not be a resting thing. It might be, there may be more. When people try to psychologize Christians for believing in stuff, there's just as good a psychology the other way. There's just as good a reason to not believe. I think humans, the reason I believe there's more to humans than just, you know, the need to eat and breathe and reproduce and die, is ultimately because that's what Jesus says. Now, I think the way it works, though, is I've had run-ins with spirits, one or two in my life, as far as I can tell. But I believe they are what I believe they are because it correlates completely with what Jesus says. So, we have numerous ways of working out what's true, and I think the thing is, we naturally try to bring them together. So that I think humans are spiritual. We have an endurance that goes beyond death because Jesus does. He thinks that. Now we've only got a few minutes. Anyone take us in a different direction?
A friend of mine who lives in a small town in New South Wales, he went up to the Northern Territory and worked in Aboriginal communities for a while, and he said that there was a lot of demonic activity up there, and it was very obvious. But when he sort of came back to a more sort of ordinary place, he wasn't sure why there'd be such a difference in it. Do you have any reflections on that?
Not on the specifics. I've never had much to do with diversity of Aboriginal communities. But I think what happens is, my understanding from people who've been heavily involved in the spirit world, one of my relatives who hates Christianity, but she got involved in seances, mediums, all sorts of stuff, thinking it was good, and then she had one or two experiences that frightened the life out of her. And so she hates Christianity, but she had this period messing with it. And I've met a number of people who've been deeply part of that world and have become Christians. And they, what this person says and what these other people have said correlate, that is, humans have got a God-given self-defense against the invasion of the obvious presence of evil spirits, which is our self-consciousness. But if you deliberately break that down, which a lot of cultures do, where they actually invite the presence of spirits, and often they'll use drugs to further disintegrate your sense of self-consciousness, and sometimes hypnosis, things like that too, where you, as it were, break down the natural defences we've been given and invite these things in. Now, my understanding, if you do that half-joking, as some kids do, if there are evil spirits in the vicinity, they may well come. Nothing might come. So evil spirits are not everywhere. They're limited. They're not like God. But if you have a seance and people mean it and they call for spirits to come, they may come. So the best thing that can happen in a seance is nothing. The worst thing that can happen, it's the opposite of prayer. The worst thing that can happen in prayer is nothing. The best thing is God may choose to answer your prayer in the affirmative. Whereas in seance, it's the opposite. So I think in culture, in societies where people have got a tendency to call spirits, believing them often to be good or neutral spirits and believing they can be harnessed for the human, you invite them in, they may well come. And then they're a bit like a pushy door-to-door salesman. Once he's in, he's reluctant to go out. And people often, and this is where cultures like that are very excited about the verses in the Bible that speak about Jesus having power over all the principalities and powers and spirits, etc. Westerners tend to not give a fig about that, because our culture was like that, and the thousands of years of Christianization have tended to drive that to the edge. Our ancestors were into all that. Well, I'm a Celtic by origin and proud of it. We were a pack of child, human sacrificing, witch doctory spirit stuff, and those filthy meddling missionaries came, and they were not allowed to kill our kids anymore. So I think that's what happens, and this is what I think happens in people's lives. If they invite that, if they open the door, I think I may have given them a clue. One of my relatives, they've got a, made the comment, she said, that verse in the Bible where Jesus says, if you open the door, I'll come in. She said, I think that's true if you invite evil, or if you invite what she thought was neutral spirits in. So that's why I think you find it in some cultures, not others. Which is why a friend of mine, who's an engineer, went to Nepal as a missionary, Sydney sider, Westerner, engineer science sort of guy, arrives in Nepal, and suddenly he's dealing with spirit. The people clearly doing weird, wild stuff, and houses that seem to be, areas that seem to be haunted. He, frightened out of his wits, he goes up to these two old English missionaries who've been, these two single lady missionaries, these old warriors, been there for decades. And he says, what do I do? And they said to him, Vic, you're a Christian, aren't you? You know what to do. He said, no, I don't. He said, well, go and read your Bible and do what the Bible says. So he went home then, but he just had no idea. But in Nepal, I think that's what goes on. But so,
just conscious of the time, we'll probably have maybe
one more question.
Maybe it could be a long question, but it needs to be a quick answer. If that's
to dream the impossible.
Any other final questions?
Can you say to West skeptics, but that's probably just some psychological thing, or maybe that's just peer pressure, or because they do that, all that sort of stuff. I can understand if it's a single occurrence or that, but I mean, what do you say to these people? I mean, it becomes a cumulative argument after all, doesn't it?
Becomes what?
A cumulative argument after all. I mean, if it happens over and over and over and over and over again, like science, we can test.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Would that be the right way to go?
I think with a skeptic, I want to say, look, I don't necessarily want to fight that fight with you about that. It's on the edge as a Christian. But I think there are enough. I have a friend who's still an atheist who had a seance as a senior high school And he said it was utterly terrible. He thought it was a joke. And he still doesn't know. He doesn't have a category to make sense of it. But he just knows something happened that was far beyond, you know, anyone playing a prank. Because it was his idea to do it. So if anyone was going to set it up, he would. You know, but I think I want to say to people, look, of course, it doesn't fit your dogma. We've all got worldviews and dogmas, which usually mostly secondhand, but partly tested. And it doesn't fit. Well, I want to talk about Jesus, really. Because he's the window. He's the one who reveals that truth. So, because the two sound, well, exorcism things I've been involved in my long, you know, 30 years as a Christian, so I still don't know exactly what was happening. I think, one of them I'm pretty sure we were dealing with an evil spirit, but I'm not sure, but I just know something real was going on, and certainly the time we prayed to cast out evil spirit in that girl, it has had a long-term benefit, because I've met her since she's become a mother and children. She still says it was real. But I'm not hanging Jesus on that.